Blog Talk Radio.
This is Rick Rockhill. You're listening to the Palm Springs Savant and Company radio show, right here on Blog Talk Radio.
And a great big hello and welcome. You're listening to the Palm Springs Savant and Company radio show. I'm Rick Rockhill, your host, and welcome to another show. Today's topic is about horror films, and there's a great one coming around called I Didn't Come Here to Die, and it's a rather uplifting title, isn't it? But that is the subject of today's show, and I'm very pleased to be welcoming the director of this film. The filmmaker Bradley Selvin will be joining us momentarily. And I just wanted to start off with reminding our listeners that the one of the sub-themes of this show is about independent films and the need to support independent films. And so we try to present a variety of types of independent films here on the show and bring to you insights about filmmaking and film festivals and so forth. And if you live in a town where there's a film festival going on, really go out and support those. Check it out. Buy a pass and see as many films as you can. You'd be surprised the number of really talented filmmakers and artists and all sorts of roles in the film industry. They're young, budding, career individuals who get their start and support from film festivals around the country. And if you don't have one happening in your hometown, maybe you travel, go somewhere for a weekend, have a nice weekend getaway somewhere to enjoy yourself and experience something new. And, in fact, this weekend is the Telluride Horror Show. That film festival is going on this weekend, October 15th, 16th, and 17th in Telluride, Colorado, and it's a great getaway weekend, and what a perfect time with Halloween being right around the corner to get into the spirit of things. So, I think we'll go ahead and get started with the show today, and I want to first go to the phones and welcome our guest, Mr. Bradley Selvin. Bradley, welcome.
Hey, how's it going? Pleasure to be here.
Great. Great. I'm so glad you're joining us today. For our listeners today, you may not know much about Bradley, but you soon will. He is the filmmaker of this great film that is coming out, and he has a background that we're going to learn about today that kind of is still early in his film career, but some great things that are coming from Bradley. We'll get into it during the show today, but I just wanted to tease everybody and let them know that you have your first feature film that's being screened this weekend at the Telluride Horror Show Film Festival, and that is called I Didn't Come Here to Die, and that's what we're going to talk about today. So I
Excellent.
Thought, Bradley, before we get into it, I wanted to share with our listeners. Sounds obvious, right? Horror films, we all know what they are. But just for fun, I went to Wikipedia and said, now what do they have to say about horror films, that segment of motion pictures? And they refer to them as unsettling movies that strive to elicit the emotions of fear, disgust, and horror from viewers. They usually feature frequent jump scenes that make the viewers jump and startle through means of macabre and supernatural, thus frequently overlapping with the fantasy and science fiction genres. Horror films also frequently overlap with the thriller genre. So, what do you have to say about that?
That covers a lot of bases right there. I mean, a lot of things can be a horror film. One of the, I think, most unsettling movies I've seen in the last few years was Steven Spielberg's movie Munich. And that there's just elements of that that make you cringe and look at humanity too. But a horror film, you go into it expecting, a certain those certain elements from it. But I don't think it's exclusive to just the horror genre. There's a lot of other movies that can make you think or unsettle you in other ways as well. But yeah, that's a pretty pretty good definition of it. Wikipedia's always got the ball rolling, so.
Yep. Well, I mean, there's been some great horror films. You know, everyone knows, of course, the list. Everyone has their opinion, but Psycho, Silence of the Lambs, Alien, Shining, I mean, the different genres of them, Frankenstein, Halloween, The Thing, Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, The Exorcist. I mean, they go on and on and on. Freddy Krueger. So, I mean, there's so many different types of horror. I think what's interesting is, you know, typically around Halloween, everyone kind of gets in looking for something scary to go see, and it's just part of our culture, celebrating Halloween. But horror movies actually are a huge piece of the motion picture industry, and I think it's interesting that your full feature film, your first, you know, entry here, is in the horror genre. What is it that got you interested in horror? How did you choose to write that?
Well, I've always enjoyed horror movies and science fiction movies a lot. I mean, I'd say those are my two favorite genres, and I think the best of them, what they do is they allow you to tackle subjects or ideas that might be a bit too on the nose or something that people don't want to deal with in the most direct way, and you can kind of indirectly hit those kinds of things when you're dealing, when you put it out of context and you put it in a sci-fi film and you talk about maybe elements that are happening in today's society and what that could possibly lead to in the future with horror films and things that may scare you or these fears that we all have, that it's a way to play them out and see how they go. And I guess I always knew that my first feature was always going to be a horror movie. Steven Spielberg's first movie was a horror film. Peter Jackson, Sam Raimi, all these directors. I think Peter Jackson even said that, you know, horror films are a great way to start because you use every single element that you use in the filmmaking toolbox in a horror movie, so that if you can do a good horror movie, you can pretty much go on to do any other type of movie in the future.
That's an interesting perspective that you have there. There's so many great filmmakers you mentioned who've really had terrific entries in this genre, and people know and love them and get excited by their work. Seeing horror at an early stage in their career, they really go off as a springboard to do lots of interesting things. You here in this film, this is your debut feature film, but you are the writer and the director. Wow. I mean, how did you get your inspiration to be a filmmaker, to get into this business?
I knew pretty early on that I wanted to be involved in film as a career and in the long haul. I think when I was 11 years old when the movie Independence Day came out, and I was just obsessed with the movie and loved it and saw it a ton of times in the theater. And in school, we had these book orders that would come around once a month where you could order books from school and they'd get delivered a couple weeks later. And I got a Independence Day making of scrapbook. And in it, you know, at that time, I wasn't really aware of things like directors and producers and all these different jobs that go on behind the scenes. But at the time, I was really into drawing, and I spent all my time drawing Ninja Turtles and Mega Man and Sonic the Hedgehog and everything. And in this Independence Day scrapbook, they had these drawings, and they were called storyboards in there. And it was the whole movie drawn out, and that really excited me. And I said, I can draw, and I love to draw, and I love movies. And I remember I took the book down and plopped it on the dinner table and opened it up to that page and pointed at the picture and said, "Hey, Mom, these things are called storyboards, and that's what I'm going to do when I grow up, is I'm going to draw storyboards for the movies." So really, from that point on, what's that?
Sorry, I was asking, did she run out of the kitchen screaming, or did she encourage you at that point?
Oh, I think she was very supportive. She, you know, patted me on the head and said, "Oh, that's nice." But, you know, I'm from a small town in Wisconsin, and working in the movie business is probably the furthest thing that she thought was actually attainable. So, but she wasn't discouraging at all. She said, "Oh, that's great," and continued on. And I mean, they were always supported me through that. And really, from that moment on, that's what I kept striving towards, is always working to be in film. And as I got older, I learned about, you know, what directors do and producers, and then realized that what I really wanted to do was direct. So it evolved from that, though.
Hmm. So would you say you had a particular inspiration somewhere to be a filmmaker at a larger level? Was it an individual, or was it strictly just that having seen Independence Day, or was it something else, something greater that drove you?
Well, I think growing up in a small town in Wisconsin, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot going on, and I was just fascinated with, I mean, my favorite thing in the world was to go to the movies and just hop into this world that was so far beyond, what was actually going on, beyond barns and cows. So, things like Jurassic Park and Independence Day, and just these big epic, talking about independent films, we didn't really get independent films where I grew up. So, I mean, a lot of my inspirations come from the big tentpole pictures, the big blockbusters. That's what I grew up around. And I just absolutely loved going in there and going into these different worlds that were just beyond what we had there. So I would say growing up around blockbuster films is really just I got excited to want to tell stories with that. I have a big imagination, and I just said, I want to tell these kinds of stories.
Yeah, I imagine you'd need that. So you're a kid, and you've got this interest, this passion, this desire. How do you go, so if someone else is listening right now, how do they go from getting their inspiration or their big idea to get started and get some practical experience? What did you do?
Our school didn't have like an AV club or anything, so what I started getting involved in middle school and all that is acting, I guess. I joined things like forensics and went to there's a theater company in town. I take acting classes there in the summer and everything, but I'm an atrocious actor, so that didn't last long at all, and I really don't like getting up in front of people. So none of that went too well. So I said, what I need to do is get behind the camera. So I guess in middle school, I started picking up. My parents had an old VHS camera, and I started making, rather than doing book reports, I would ask the teachers if I could just do an adaptation of the book with my friends and turn that in instead. So we do little adaptations of books we were reading, like The Most Dangerous Game, and we do little five-minute blurbs that were really horrible, but a lot of fun and a good start. And once I started doing that, that's where the bug really bit on, wanting to make films and just continually do better. You would do it and just be like, that's kind of crap. I had high standards for myself even then, so I'd say I have to do better and I need a better camera. So I think then I went and got my first job in town at a little hardware store with the intention of just saving up enough money so that I could buy a better camera. And I would do that, and then that camera wasn't good enough, so I saved up and bought a better one, and eventually then, bought graphics cards for my parents' computer and would install them and taught myself to edit so that I could now put in titles and put in music and cut the scenes that didn't work and things like that. And basically did that throughout high school to the point where by the time I was a senior, rather than having to take finals or anything in class, the teachers would let me do a video representing whatever it was, even in math class. For my math final, I put together like a movie about with my brothers in the backyard, and they had to find this hidden treasure somewhere out there, and they used tangents and isosceles triangles and all this to find the point where the treasure is, and then they dig it up. And luckily, my filmmaking skills were even good enough at that point, because I guess I got the math actually wrong in the video, but the teacher still gave me an A for effort. But anyway, I mean, that's really where it started, just the fun of it and wanting to do it. And those little goofy videos I did with my brothers and everything gave me the ability. I went into a little local wedding videography place in town. And when I was 17, I got a job. I started shooting and editing wedding videos for people. And that's really where I learned the technical aspects of everything, learned how to use better cameras and learn how to really edit on Final Cut and Avid and all these different programs and work for 12 hours a day and shoot on the fly and things like that. Mm-hmm.
So at some point you started getting more serious about this and, kind of honing your skills, I guess. Did you go through any like seminars? Did you go to conferences? Did you go work as an extra on a film somewhere? How did you get you know, make that big step to get some like direct experience then?
They didn't really have any of that around where I grew up. So basically, I shot weddings, and that's where I really learned the technical aspects of just filmmaking, basic shooting and framing and editing. And I also got a job, I got a part-time job at a movie theater in town just so that I could see all the movies in the world that I wanted for free. So I would see absolutely everything that was playing, you know, a couple times while it was in the theater. And basically I just watched a ton of movies, and DVDs were really my best friend. I bought a ton of DVDs and would not just watch the movie, but listen to the commentary, the director commentaries, and watch all the behind the scenes and see how things were made and listen to directors talk about, you know, why this was shot a certain way or what they were trying to go for, or really learning from, you know, Ridley Scott or Christopher Nolan themselves on why they do things the way they do. So I guess those were really my seminars.
Well, that's pretty neat. Now, did you find yourself drawn to more horror films early on, or did you really just kind of catch everything, but did you have any particular favorites to watch?
I mean, I catch everything. I love all kinds of genres of films. I mean, I even really liked romantic comedies growing up. There's one with Ben Affleck and Sandra Bullock called Forces of Nature that I really liked. And in fact, one of my favorite genres is musicals. I absolutely love musicals. Julie Taymor's movie Across the Universe, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. But I am drawn. I do like horror movies, and I do like sci-fi. And I'd have to say, if I had to pick a favorite movie, it's probably the original Alien, Ridley Scott's movie, because it's kind of a combination of both. It's horror, it's sci-fi, it's scary, it's thrilling, it's claustrophobic, and it's just, I think, filmmaking at its peak. And I guess that's why I like horror and sci-fi, is because they really elicit a lot of emotion that you sometimes don't get out of these other films. You really get deeply involved in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a great point you're making. You must have also, I understand you worked as a production assistant on a few films, and that must have really helped you get some other insights into, I mean, different types of films, but at least you get the basics down. I mean, that has to be part of your toolbox of skills. Was that something that were you really surprised at some of the things you learned in being a production assistant, or did you kind of feel like you had it down pat? What was that experience like?
No, that was hugely, hugely informative. I after I finished film school, I was kind of looking at, okay, what am I going to do now? I can move out to L.A. like everyone does, but one of my big inspirations growing up was Robert Rodriguez. And, you know, he is from Austin and shoots all his movies in Austin. And I knew they have a smaller film industry, but they still have a pretty good film industry down there. So I thought, you know, he's been kind of who I grew up idolizing and loving the way he does films, all digitally and quick and on the go and low budget. So I figured I'd give it a shot, and I moved down to Austin, Texas. And, yeah, my first production assistant job was on a movie called Band Slam, which has Vanessa Hudgens in it, and it's kind of a teeny bopper kind of. It's got a really great script. It's a pretty fun movie, but it's just about a bunch of kids starting a band and trying to win this Battle of Bands contest. But I was the editing PA on that, so there was the main editor and then the editor's assistant, and then I was the PA on that. And basically, my job was I downloaded all the files. They would shoot in Austin and then send all the film out to L.A., and then it would have to be downloaded back in Austin for them to edit it. So my main job was just downloading all that footage and labeling it and getting it to the assistant editor so that she could get it to the main editor. But that was just really cool getting to hang out. The editor on the movie is John Gilbert, who's an Academy Award nominee, and he edited the first Lord of the Rings movie, as well as a ton of other films like The Bank Job. I think he edits all of Richard Donaldson's films and everything. and getting to hang out with those people and see. And then the assistant editor has been the assistant editor on the movie 300 and Journey to the Center of the Earth. And it was amazingly fun just to get to hang out with them and see what, you know, normal people they are, and that, you know, I can do this too. This isn't some wacky kind of world that's that I'll never get into. And that was really neat. That was kind of in the behind-the-scenes process of things, in the post-production kind of end of it. The next movie I worked on, I actually got to work on a Robert Rodriguez movie. It was a family film he did called Shorts. And on that, I was the property PA. So I was on set working with the props department, and that was a huge, huge eye-opener just to see how this real movie set worked that had millions of dollars into it and all the people on it. And the biggest thing to me that that I learned on that was how hard everybody works on that. I mean, I think that was one of the hardest jobs I ever had, but everyone else was working so hard. It's really, really hugely long days, and people are hauling huge lights, and there's all this stuff, and you really realize what the director saying one thing, how that affects everyone, and then everyone has to move and do this, and these little things just take an extraordinary amount of work and time. And in the future, I'll always just remember now on any set just how hard everyone else is working there. So that was quite an eye-opener.
Yeah, exactly. You had this, you know, close-up experience, hands-on, doing a variety of different functions in these films. I mean, that's kind of what builds your resume and builds your, like I said earlier, your own toolkit, the things that you'll bring, that you took with you in making this film, I'm sure. You also had some experience in Expecting Mary as well, right? And I've had that some folks from that film on the show here, and really enjoyed that. Tell us about what you had to do with Expecting Mary.
Yeah, Kim Waltrip, who produced Expecting Mary, also produced this movie, and Jim Casey, who's the executive producer on Expecting Mary, was also on this movie as well. I got to work on that because the guy who started the film school I went to was Dan Gordon, who directed Expecting Mary, and he called me up like 2 years after film school, and he said, "Hey, I'm about to direct my feature debut," and he had all these special effects things that he needed done, and he asked me if I'd want to do those, and I think he must have over-exaggerated or thought I did a lot more special effects than I did on my student film, which he'd liked quite a bit, but there's no way I could have been able to do the things he was asking for. But there was another student who we went to school with, who was good friends with, who did the special effects on I Didn't Come Here to Die as well. But I said, well, that might be something that David could definitely do for you. Unfortunately, I don't have those skills to do that. And then he was about to hang up, and that was going to be that. But just out of the kindness of his heart, he said, so what have you been doing lately? And I said, well, I've been living in Austin and been working as a production assistant on movies out here. And he said, oh, okay, well, you already have some experience. He said, we have a office PA position that is going to be open. Would you want to do that? And I said, absolutely. And he said, okay, great. Well, we'll see you Monday morning. And this was Friday night. So I basically had to just pack up everything and head out within a couple hours after he said that. And I went out to Expecting Mary initially as an office PA, where I was pretty much just getting lunches and making copies and doing stuff around the office. And I overheard one day the line producer talking, and I think the people who were supposed to shoot the behind the scenes on the movie, something fell through and they weren't going to be able to. And I had just gotten this new HD camera, and I edited and shot weddings. So I said, not to be nosy, but I just heard that fell through, just to let you know. I have the equipment. I've shot a ton of stuff. I'd be happy to do it if it comes to that. And he said, good to know, note taken. And about a week later, he called me into his office and said, okay, well, you're going to be shooting behind the scenes on the movie. So from that point on, by the time I started shooting, I was the EPK producer on that. So I shot all the behind the scenes on Expecting Mary.
So the lesson there for our listeners who may be looking to get into the film industry is, you know, accept jobs when you get them, go there, expose, you know, yourself to as much as you can, and really just be involved, because you never know where you might get tapped to fill in for someone or pick up a responsibility. And I think that's a great example. I get questions from various people who are looking to get into the film industry because they've listened to other episodes here, and they've asked me, how do I get in? What do I need to do? And I always go back to these exact examples you just gave. You got to go and take jobs. Sometimes there's free jobs. You just have to go and do them and be an intern, and you get something from that. But those early experiences you have are what take you along your career.
Well, yeah, absolutely. What I kind of left out on BandSlam, I didn't start out there either as the editing PA. They actually just called me in to do some day work on it. I came in for 2 days and just did some horrible work, like putting up I helped the sound guys put up foam inside this trailer that didn't have air conditioning or anything in the middle of summer in Austin, and it's absolutely horrible, but it was fun getting to hang out there. I mean, there's some really awesome music producers out there from LA, and I got to chat it up with them, and I just did that for 2 days, and that was supposed to be it, and then they had my resume on file, and so a week later or so, they had an opening for the editing position, and they called me in for an interview on that. And same thing with the Robert Rodriguez movie, too. I started out on that as the construction PA. So I was working with the construction department, mostly just going to Home Depot and different places and buying the materials they needed to make props and sets and everything. And they ended up having the property PA they didn't think would be qualified enough. They were worried about having him around on set. They just didn't know if he was going to be able to cut it, but they trusted me enough that they said, we're going to switch positions with you guys because we think you can handle being on set and feel comfortable with you there. And so that's how that happened. So you always just take the opportunity and then just do the best job possible and don't whine and complain. And if you're good, you know, good things will happen. So.
Well, I think that's great advice for, as I said, aspiring young filmmakers who want to get into this business. You need to take those jobs when you can and get the experience. And as I say, things will happen. If they're meant to be, they'll come to you. We're talking with Bradley Sullivan. He's the filmmaker, the director and screenwriter for the upcoming horror film soon to be released, I Didn't Come Here to Die. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to kind of get into the film a little bit and talk about the process you went through to write it and get it to screen and all that. So let's take a quick break. Just stay right with us, and we'll be back in a moment.
All right.
You can save money and help the environment without taking a vow of poverty. How does that work? Well, by choosing Energy Star qualified lighting for your home. When you do, you'll become part of a growing national movement. Just go to energystar.gov and click on Take the Change of Light Pledge. It takes only a few short seconds for you to have a long-term impact. Brighten your environmental future. From the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
What if you didn't care about being on the fast track? Instead of flying to the big interview, what if you flew somewhere else altogether? Like a village in Botswana or a tiny island in the Pacific, where needs are easy to see. What if you decided to share your skills with others and help someone else get ahead? Peace Corps. Life is calling. How far will you go? To find out more, call 800-424-8580 or visit peacecorps.gov.
And we're back. This is Rick Rockhill. You're listening to the Palm Springs Savant and Company radio show. My guest today is Bradley Sullivan. He's the director and screenwriter of the upcoming horror film, I Didn't Come Here to Die. And we're talking today about this film. It's going to be screened this Friday at the Telluride Horror Show Film Festival in Telluride, Colorado. You can go to their website at TellurideHorrorShow.com and find out how to get tickets and more about the film. And also you can find out a little bit about this film at 235.com. That's spelled out T-W-O-35.com. And see a trailer and some more goodies about this wonderful film that's here. And we're back with Bradley. Before the break, we were talking about how you kind of got into this and your background. I kind of want to take this now into how you actually got this concept of the script Writing a screenplay and getting it from start to finish isn't something you do overnight. How long did that take you?
Well, I got the initial idea from after high school. A couple of years after high school, I had a friend that joined this National Service Volunteer Program called AmeriCorps NCCC, and he just had the greatest time and had great things to say about it. And I kind of didn't know where I wanted to go or how I was going to get into film yet, and was kind of floating around and said, well, this will be good for some life experience anyway. So I joined AmeriCorps and CCC, and I basically traveled around the country with a team of volunteers for a year where we went and did different projects and different kinds of volunteer work, from environmental restoration to tutoring to all kinds of different things over the course of a year. So the idea of the movie came from that, because in AmeriCorps you had a group of 14 people that you traveled around with for a year. Everyone's between 18 and 24, of every different age, every different race, religion, sex possible, and you're all, it's like the real world but on the road and doing volunteer work. And everyone would always joke and say, you know, well, this would make a great reality TV show. And I really don't like reality TV. So I said, well, I think it'd make a great movie. And I'd always known that, you know, I want to make a horror movie. So I thought, you know, let's get the wheels spinning and see where this goes. And initially, it kind of just stalled because I couldn't get around the fact of, like, I kept thinking of, like, okay, how do we get a killer into this situation, or how do we get a ghost story going on here? But I just never really liked any of those ideas, because those types of horror movies just don't really get to me. I'm not a huge fan of the, you know, Friday the 13th type killer running around through the woods, or Texas Chainsaw type thing. So it kind of stalled for a while. I always had the idea in there, and about a year after AmeriCorps, I was watching videos that I had filmed throughout it. I put together videos of every project we did. We had one where we were working out in the middle of the woods, in the middle of nowhere, no cell reception or anything, and we were building a summer camp, and we had all kinds of power tools and everything that I'd never used growing up, everything that I tried to avoid while I was growing up, power tools and chainsaws and axes and all this. And I was watching this video and going, oh, my goodness, we had no idea what we were doing. We all could have got hurt so badly in there. And I thought back, and I thought, oh, well, that's kind of interesting. And I thought back to all the little mishaps we had. We had nothing life-threatening or terrible at all happen, but little accidents. And I thought, well, what if you took a horror movie? What if there was no killer? What if it was scary because it's something that could – it's more realistic, almost something that could happen. What if – one of those little accidents had turned into a big accident, and then you really are stuck out there, and what if those things kept piling up, and what would you do in that situation until things spiraled out of control? And once that hit, I got really excited to do a movie that was hopefully a little bit different, and it basically rolled around for, I just kept writing the movie in my head for about 3 years or so. While I worked on these other features and traveled around and did things. So I worked as a PA. And the actual process of putting, not pen to paper, but with fingers to computer is the hardest part for me. It's so easy to come up with concepts and write in your head, but the actual act of sitting down and writing it out is the hardest thing. So I actually didn't start typing it until about 4 days before I was going to give it to somebody. So if you're going to say, I actually physically wrote the script in about 4 days, but it was written long before that and had been written in my head for the last 3 years. So.
Well, that's pretty consistent, actually, with a lot of a lot of people I've spoken to, particularly very early on. You've got these things marinating in your head, so to speak, and you know, you get inspiration from all kinds of places, and until something actually motivates you to sit down and type it up. They're really just concepts still, but you really had a lot of time to think about this. I think what impresses me is you had such clarity of mind that you could do it in such a short amount of time once you actually force yourself to sit down and do it. There's a synopsis of the film that I want to just read for our listeners. And it says here, never has a humanitarian project been so deadly and dangerous than when six young volunteers head into the woods to build a new camp. Maybe the problem was heading into the woods in the first place, but horrific accidents, rash decisions, and the unpredictability of human nature lead them all to the same disturbing conclusion. So there's the setup for the film. You have a pretty good script, and that's tough enough to get a script written with something that's going to draw people in. The idea of getting that and bringing it to screen is one, but casting is also critical. And let's just talk about the cast. You assembled a group of actors here. It's, I guess you kind of call it an ensemble. You've got Emmy Robin, Indiana Adams, Jeremy Scott Vandermeers, Kurt Cole, Maddie Goff,
yep,
Nico Redstar, Travis Scott Newman. So these are any of these individuals you knew and worked with. How did you assemble this cast?
Other than Travis Scott Newman, I didn't know anybody. No, I knew Travis Scott Newman, who plays a small but super pivotal role in the movie. I knew him from back when I was in film school. He was in a student film that I was the DP on, and he's just an awesome guy. He has such charisma. He reminded me totally of Bruce Campbell from the Evil Dead movies, and he's just the most fun to be around. And I always thought, man, if I ever do a feature, I want to have him in it somehow. And when I was writing that role of this cop in the movie, I wrote it with him in mind, and luckily he was able to do it. But everyone else was brand new. When we got everything together, we knew we couldn't afford to be flying people out from around the country, so we had to get local actors from Texas, mostly around Austin, but a lot of people came down from Dallas and everything. We just put up casting calls on every website that we could imagine, and reserved this back patio at a coffee shop called Austin Java in town, and set up a few casting sessions where people come in and read.
And that's the way that casting is done in independent films. Let me tell you, it's exactly the way you've described in so many other films of people I've interviewed. And again, people listening who want to get into this business, these are the tips and things that you'll learn along the way, that it's not, very complicated. You just have to have the right people who can guide you and give you tips along the way. This is probably a good point, though, for us to – let's play a clip of the film, because you've kind of given us an overview of how you got there. That synopsis I read is I think it's compelling. It drew me in. And I just want to play this audio clip, and then we'll talk about it just after it plays. So let's take a listen.
Okay.
This is it, guys. Last stop for the next 50 miles. So basically, we're not going to be coming back in town for another 2 weeks, and that's going to be for our supply run. So any goodies or personal items you guys want, I would
get
them now.
Get your personal goodies right now, guys. Yes, Steve?
I got it, girl.
Oh, okay.
Steve, you don't have to raise your hand. I'm not your teacher.
Oh, sorry, Sophia. I was just wondering if we had time to make a call.
Yes, please do. You guys call whoever you need to, because we're not going to have any cell phone reception out at camp.
Mm-hmm. What if there's an emergency?
Well, we have a satellite phone, but it's for just that, emergencies. Okay, go on, we're going to leave in 15 minutes.
Hey, guys, 15 minutes starts right... Hang on. Hey, hang on! 15 minutes starts now. All right.
So, it's just a little insight into kind of how things get started. Can you describe what's going on in that scene other than the obvious? They're kind of getting ready to go into the woods.
That's the necessary scene you need at the beginning of these types of movies, you know, establishing that they're... It's just a necessary thing these days with how we all have cell phones and everything, and you have to set up the stakes and everything. So this is just very much towards the beginning of the movie as they're making their last stop for gas, which is really the last bit of human civilization before they get out miles in the middle of nowhere. And that was the only clip I could really find to put in there to send to you, because there's so many kind of twists and turns and everything later on in the movie that I didn't want to give anything away. So,
I also
had to find something radio friendly, as things mostly just turn into screams and running around later. So,
Well, and we want people to we want to just tease them enough so they want to go out and see the film. I think what anybody can relate to is this idea that what you've done effectively here is kind of set the scene. You got a group of kids who are heading in, and they are going to be giving up some of their creature comforts. We all like to know that we can pick up our phone and call anybody at any time. There's only so much gas in the car. They're going to be kind of leaving civilization. And just that alone kind of heightens, you know, your fears and your sensitivities. If any of us have been through that area, I mean, today, people panic when they lose cell phone reception for a few minutes. So imagine if you're going into the woods.
And everything in that clip is what actually happened. I mean, when we were working on this project, we were in the woods for 2 months. We really didn't have cell phone reception. We had to have a satellite phone for emergencies in case, you know, something really terrible did happen. But we were miles away from nowhere. I even just finished a road trip. I just drove the whole west coast of California and then up to Oregon. And I barely had any cell phone reception whatsoever for an entire month and a half on that trip. I thought AT&T was supposed to cover like 97% of the country. So I guess I must have driven through the whole 3% of the country that isn't covered because it's no service. And that amazed me that, you know, today in 2010, it's not that far off. It seems like a contrived, easy thing to put in there, and a lot of times it is, but it's also really happens. So
people can relate to that. I Didn't Come Here to Die is just in time for Halloween, coming out for its screenings. And what would you say that horror fans are going to really enjoy about this film?
Well, I'm a horror fan, and I tried to write the kind of movie that I want to see. I'm not a big fan of the Saw type of movies or the people just tied up and getting tortured the whole time. I wanted to make more of a kind of singing person's horror movie, something that it's not just horrific. There's a lot of fun in it too. But if you like horror movies, there's the gore. There's scenes that are very tense. There's all the elements that you would like about that. But I think that even if you aren't into horror movies, if you happen to be dragged to it or someone's just watching it, I think it's actually a lot more of a mainstream bit than people might think, because it plays on a lot of the fears that you just normally would have. I mean, we've all seen someone cutting a bagel and you say, oh my goodness, you know they're going to cut themselves just the way they're holding it. Or someone standing on the top ring of a ladder and, you know, they shouldn't be. And we all have thought that, and this kind of just plays into what if the worst-case scenario happens. So while it is a horror movie, I'd say it falls more in line with it's a thriller, and
Well, it sounds pretty scary to me. when I watch the trailer, I find that it is a little spooky. But in my view, it looks exciting. I mean, if you watch this film, the trailer, you do get the sense that there's activity happening, there's things going on, and you do kind of lose control you don't have control over the situation. I think that's probably the most difficult portion of watching a horror film, is that you lose your sense of control, and it can be very frightening. So we're going to come right back and take a quick break here. Just a moment. Stay with us, and we'll have more on I Didn't Come Here to Die.
Diabetes is a killer. After I was diagnosed, I didn't feel sick, so I didn't listen to my doctor. Then it struck. I had a heart attack, then a stroke, and I was only 49.
People with diabetes are 2 to 4 times more likely to suffer a stroke than people without diabetes. Many who survive are severely disabled. Learn to reduce your risk of stroke. Call 1-800-DIABETES for your free diabetes survival guide.
Don't let diabetes destroy your life.
A message from the American Diabetes Association and the American College of Cardiology.
And we're back. We're talking with Bradley Sullivan of I Didn't Come Here to Die. He's the director and screenwriter, and this film is being screened at the Telluride Horror Show Film Festival in Telluride, Colorado, this weekend. You can go find tickets for it at TellurideHorrorShow.com. Bradley, one of the things that I have to say is, you know, you managed to get picked up by this film festival. That's not an easy feat. Having been involved in other film festivals myself, there are a lot of films that are presented to the screening committees, and they pour through them in huge volumes. In some cases, it takes them a year to view all the things they want to potentially screen. You must be very proud that you managed to get yours in. How did you manage to get into the festival?
Yeah, I am very happy. I don't know what the Telluride Horror Show's submission status was, but I know that film festivals like South by Southwest received sometimes over 4,000 feature-length film submissions in a year. So,
right.
Yeah, it's a feat to try to get in. Luckily with this one, actually when I finished the trailer for the movie earlier this summer and put it online, a bunch of websites picked up on it, and it luckily got a whole bunch of really good press all over online. And Ted Wilson, who's running the festival, actually sent me an email to the website and said, hey, I saw the trailer. I loved it. It looks great. We're starting this Telluride Horror Show. It's going to be the first annual thing, and we'd love to take a look at your movie. Just, you know, send it in pronto, and we'll take a look at it. And so luckily they were the ones initially interested and keeping a lookout for it already. And so we sent it in, and a few weeks later they called back. They said, we love it. We want to play it, and now it's a part of the fest. It's going to be there on opening night. And it should be fun.
Yeah, to be on opening night too. That's pretty cool. I mean, you've got some calling it a throwback horror film, but it's original. It's not like something you've seen elsewhere. It has a good mix of gore and some humor, some funny parts, unpredictability, and I think that's what's going to hook people on this and get them excited about it. I will be at the film festival this Friday. I'm looking forward to seeing it. I know that film festivals are important ingredient into marketing a film. An independent film doesn't, for people who are listening who don't know, don't have the benefit of the huge film movie house marketing budget, so they really rely on independent films. And I understand you have another one. After Telluride, you're going somewhere else with this, right?
Yeah, the very next weekend we're playing at the Austin Film Festival in Austin, Texas, which is awesome because it's where we shot the movie. And a lot of people are going to be able to be there, and it's playing up against Danny Boyle and Darren Aronofsky's latest movies are there, and a lot of movies that have much bigger budgets and bigger stars than what we were able to have, but we get to play up against those same films. And it's also a screenwriting conference, so there's going to be every big Hollywood screenwriter you can imagine is also there for the conference and everything, and so hopefully we'll get a lot of good eyes on the film there. But yeah, that'll be playing the very next week, and I think Thursday is the opening night of the festival, and we play that night, and we also play on Saturday night.
Okay, cool. I mean, that's for people who are certainly local, they have the opportunity to see this film, and you know, if you can get there, great. You know, I always urge my listeners to go and hear, see what's happening locally. You can go, if you live in Austin, greater Austin area, go to austinfilmfestival.com. You can find out more about the film, buy your tickets, and support independent films. That's kind of my ongoing theme here. It's probably worth mentioning here, just a shout-out for anybody in the Texas area, where are some of the location, on-location sites you did in the Austin area? If anybody wanted to go check it out and talk to the locals who may have seen you filming, where did you shoot this?
We shot mostly in two towns right around Austin. The town of Bastrop is where we shot the whole gas station scene, which was actually the same location, I found out later, of another horror movie that was shot in Texas called All the Boys Love Mandy Lane. And so that's where we shot that. And then the majority of everything else was shot in the town of Kyle, which is also right outside of Austin on a private residence. That have a ton of acreage, and we use their woods.
I actually tell you, I've been to Bastrop. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I mean, in the actual town of Austin, we just shot little pickups here and there. Nothing particular, but just tiny little pickups every now and then. So, but mostly, yeah, Bastrop and Kyle are where we shot.
Okay, great. Now, do you have... well, you really didn't have much need for any extras or anything in this film. Is that right? Because you pretty much were working with just the core cast.
Yeah, and that was intentional in the writing process. We knew it was going to be this low-budget movie, and we'd have to keep the numbers of people down and everything. So it's really just the six main actors. And there's the Travis Scott Newman plays a character that's here and there throughout. And that's really it. There's not anybody else in the entire movie.
How long did it take you to shoot this from start to finish?
We actually shot in just a ridiculously short time. 7 days we shot the whole movie.
Wow.
So from sun up to sundown, 7 days total.
And do you know roughly what the budget was, or did the producers handle that?
Yeah, we shot the movie. When it all was said and done with shooting, I think it came out to somewhere right under $50,000. And
wow.
We've done a little bit of ADR work and everything since, but that's
sure.
been pretty minor. So we flew a sound guy out from L.A. to come and help record some additional dialogue afterwards to help clean it up. But, yeah,
sure.
all in all, it was done for about $50,000.
Yeah, so it's a true independent film, low budget, quick shoot schedule, and a tight script and a cast that's limited. So you were able to get this done out the door in the can, as they say, and now you're screening it. I mean, how incredible is that? You've got a great success story here with I Didn't Come Here to Die. I think what people are going to find at this film when they see it, I think folks will be surprised by the various emotions and feelings you'll have watching this, and I think that's going to be a pleasant surprise for people. And yet it's still a good horror movie. I'll see the full screening, of course, on Friday night myself. But I'm excited about it. I really am. I have to tell you.
Well, thank you.
What,
yeah, I should.
I'll buy you.
Oh, no, I just. Sounds great.
So we mentioned that you're at the Austin Film Festival next weekend. After the following week, what are the projects? Once you get past this, you probably have a couple of the screenings, and you're gonna have this one behind you. What other projects do you have lined up? Anything at the moment?
I have a ton of screenplay ideas, and things have been developing and creating treatments and everything. But what happens next, I think, is going to be really dependent on how the film's received. How it what people think about it at these festivals, and depending on some of the press and some of the write-ups, and we've been talking to sales agents and distributors and things about it. And right now, there's nothing lined up for the next project quite yet, but hopefully, this movie's successful enough to afford me the opportunity to get to make more. And if someone has enough faith in seeing that they say, well, they'd like to do something again in the future. So.
Great. So for anyone who could be listening who has a chance to see your film, to see I Didn't Come Here to Die, or who just thinks you're cool, how can they want to reach you to talk to you about other projects? Where should they send? Where should they send them? Facebook, or do you have an email, or is it? What's your suggestion?
You can go if you go to just idintcomeheretodie.com. Just all spelled out. IDidn'tComeHereToDie.com. There's links to absolutely everything we have online for the film. We have a Facebook page. We have Twitter. There's an email link on there. You can click to get showtimes for any of the screenings. There's links to behind-the-scenes videos and the trailers and all kinds of stuff. So if you want to see actually how we made the movie, we've been doing a series of behind-the-scenes videos chronicling the pre-production all the way through the entire production that I think we're up to day 4 right now. But there's a link to that through the website as well. So.
Okay, great. Oh, yeah, here you are on Twitter. You're just, I'll spell it out. It's, it's the initials of the film, IDCHTD is the Twitter name. So if you want to check out what's happening on Twitter and, as you said, on Facebook also, those are today, this day and age, everyone is trying to stay close to what's happening. And you've got a fun story, and it'll make people squirm in their seats. But if they want to find out more or contact you, they can do so by reaching you there.
Yeah, absolutely. The Twitter and the Facebook are really the best ways to keep informed of what's happening or to get a hold of me. If you write something on there, I'll see it and can respond and everything. So either one of those is a great, great resource.
Great. What about this? What we talked about today, I wanted to kind of set this up about independent filmmaking and certainly talk about your film. But for anyone listening who is kind of at awe at the fact that you were able to do this on such a short timeline and so forth, do you have any advice for other aspiring filmmakers who are trying to get their projects off the ground?
And the biggest thing you can do is just have it. If it's what you really want to do and you just keep working towards that goal, and you just don't have anything else that could possibly get in the way, and you just keep going towards it, it'll either happen or you'll have died in the process of trying to make it happen. But hopefully something will have happened before you go. But really, I can't believe when I go home to visit or anything, how many people I run into. I'm only 25, but I run into people and everyone goes, well, that's really great that you're still going for it and you're working in the movies and you're doing what you always said you wanted to do. But I'm only 25 and they're only the same age too. It just seems like they gave up a little too early on what they wanted to go for. And it wasn't that I did try hard and I did work hard and try to do the best I could, but it was, I think, more so just the continuation to keep going for it. Too many people quit the race too early. And if you just keep your sights on that, you should be pretty good. And then the other thing is, I guess, just rather than just talking about things, actually, you know, do things, show people that you have something, that people are going to ask about a screenplay or to see a short film or something, and rather just being able to then, rather than being able to just talk a good game, if you have something to actually show for it, you're all of a sudden in the top 10% right there. And then if you can do good and rise above that top 10%, it's just all that much easier. So, and watch a lot of movies. Watch all your behind-the-scenes commentaries on movies and just make it what you want to do, and hopefully good things will come from that.
Okay, great. I want to, I'm going to put you on the spot in a minute. I want to just give you a couple fictitious matchups. I guess we wouldn't be the first time doing it, but I'm going to pit a couple classic horror characters against one another, and you have to tell me who you think would win. But let's just take a 30-second break, and we'll be right back.
What do your status updates say? You're learning a new language? Going all organic? Instead of typing your feelings, what if you could put them into action? By creating a network to help keep kids off the streets in a country like Armenia or in Honduras. What if every ounce of your being helped update the status of a person, and in turn they did the same for you? Would this be enough social interaction? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. Get interactive at peacecorps.gov/game.
All right, we are back, and we've been talking with Bradley Selvin. He's the screenwriter and director of I Didn't Come Here to Die, the horror film being screened this weekend at the Telluride Horror Festival. And you can go to TellurideHorrorShow.com for ticket information, and the following weekend at the Austin Film Festival. So go to AustinFilmFestival.com, and you can get tickets there. So had a lot of fun talking to you today. I just want to give you a couple hypotheticals here. So just for fun, you may or may not be fans of these guys, but so what do you think? Who's going to win in a matchup if you had Jason versus Freddy? Who would be your call?
Freddy, for sure. Jason, to me, is just a big lug. Not any scarier than your average high school bully, but Freddy, he's smart and witty and can get you in your dreams or out of your dreams, and could probably just kill you with his looks there. He's got kind of a hideous look going on. So, I'd say Freddy every time.
Okay, what about the character actor Lon Chaney versus Boris Karloff? Who's scarier?
I'd have to say the Boris Karloff gets under my skin a little bit more, just with the look.
Okay. What about, let's just call it zombies versus classic Dracula. Who's scarier?
I would have to go with the zombies. The zombies, the vampires just seem a little too unrealistic for me. I couldn't actually picture that happening, but some type of zombie infection seems, in 28 Days Later, they make that seem kind of like a realistic virus type thing, so I'm going to go with that because I could kind of see something like that happening in a wacky world.
Great. Well, that's fun. I'm really looking forward to seeing the film, the full film screen on Friday night. It's been a pleasure having you on the show today. For anyone listening, one more time, you can go to IDidn'tComeHereToDie.com. You can find the film on Facebook or Twitter. And you can get more information about the film there. Also, be sure to go to the two websites at the film festivals. Check it out. And if you can't get to the festival, at least follow what's going on and watch for it at your local theater down the road. Bradley, it's been a pleasure having you on the show today. I really appreciate your time. I wish you lots of luck with this film. And I know this is the start of good things for you.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for having me on. It's been a treat, and I look forward to seeing you this weekend then at the show, and I hope you enjoy the movie. So.
I'm sure I will. I'm looking to be scared, and it's a squirm in my chair, and it'll get me in the Halloween mood, so it'll be a good start to the season.
Excellent.
Thanks again, and we'll see you Friday.
All right. Have a great weekend.
You too. You've been listening to the Palm Springs Company on Blog Talk Radio. Join us next time, and we'll be back next Sunday.
This is Rick Rockhill. You're listening to the Palm Springs Savant and Company radio show, right here on Blog Talk Radio.